So the Christians of the Islamic world produced several outspokenly polemical treatises against Islam between the 8th and the 10th century. For the last few years, I have been studying these writings, especially their portrayals of Muhammad and Islam. I was struck by the depth and breadth of their information. Their authors demonstrate familiarity with a broad range of genres of Muslim literature. I have been puzzled by this level of knowledge. How did these Christian polemicists gain so much and so accurate information about Islam in an age when books were expensive and Muslims a numerical minority in the Middle East? The recognition that not only their information is correct, but their phraseology is Islamic too, they speak the language of insider to Islam, led me to ask whether they might have known Islam firsthand, whether they had been Muslims who converted to Christianity. As no scholar has investigated Muslim conversion to Christianity in this period in the Middle East comprehensively, I had to start with asking whether there was a significant number of Muslim converts to Christianity in this period at all. These questions led to the paper I'm going to present here. It's a matter of general knowledge that the current religious demography of the Middle East is the result of conversions to Islam from Christianity, Judaism, Zoroastrianism, Manichaeism, and other pre-Islamic religions. In the wake of the Arab conquest, the Muslims constituted no more than a small ruling class in the lands under their control. Here you see the current religious demography of the Middle East, where shades of green indicate Islam, of course. And then here is the same according to countries, again, shades of green are Islam, Shiite or Sunni Islam. So during the few centuries after the Arab conquest, the Muslims came to dominate numerically too. Soon after 1000 AD, they probably made up the demographic majority in the central regions of the Middle East, from Iran to Egypt. Here you see a rough impression of the increase in the proportion of Muslims in the Middle East. I have to warn you that none of the numbers can be really relied on, except for the zero at 600 AD. even modern statistics are unreliable in many countries. Christian, Jewish, and Zoroastrian communities endured, of course, up to today, and even experienced the occasional cultural and religious flowering. But their numbers continued and continue to dwindle in Muslim majority countries. In any period after the Arab conquest, conversions to Islam undoubtedly happened far more frequently in the Middle East than conversions to any other religion. Reading histories of the Middle East, it seems that Muslims left their religion for another only in lands lost to Muslim rule. For a variety of reasons, this religion was always Christianity. From the Arab conquest onwards, the near constant warfare between Byzantium and the Muslim powers to be led to the captivity of large numbers of Muslims in Christian hands. Many were ransomed, but many others converted to Christianity. The Byzantine military resurgence from the late 9th century led to the conquest of territories long held by Muslims and thus home to a large Muslim populace. Many left and resettled under Muslim rule, but many others opted to convert and stay. Similar situations arose with the arrival of the Crusaders to the Levant, as well as during the Reconquista on the Iberian Peninsula and under Christian rule in medieval Sicily. In only a few cases were Muslims forced to convert to Christianity. Most of them, they did so voluntarily in the hope of easier advancement in the society they now found themselves. Some converts even came to occupy prominent positions. Muslim legal scholars, in order to forestall the permanent loss of the faithful to Christianity, urged those who came under Christian rule to immigrate to Muslim lands and exempted from the charge of apostasy those who left Islam under pressure. After the fall of the Crusader states and the success of the Reconquista, missionaries started to travel from Western Europe to Islamic lands to convert Muslims to Christianity. Their attempts ended in abject failure. Converts from Islam were few and far between. The enduring legacy of the early modern Catholic presence in the Middle East has been the formation of Eastern Catholic churches in the Ottoman period, to the expense of not the Muslim, but the Eastern Christian communities. In the early modern period, more Christians turned Turk, as they were called, served Muslim rulers than baptized Turks, Christian ones. Even in the late 19th and the early 20th century, when much of the Middle East was under European control, it was a rare Muslim who converted to Christianity. Despite their impressive human and financial outlay, modern Protestant missions could show only diminutive Protestant congregations for their efforts, again mostly won over from Eastern Christian communities. The generally accepted explanation among them was that Muslims didn't respond to the missionary's call due to the strict laws of against apostasy in Islam. As it is well known, Islamic law prescribes death to Muslim converts to other religions. The precise reasons of the failure of the missionaries might have been more complex and might have varied from period to period, but their outcome is clear. Observing the religious landscape of the Middle East today, it may seem as if religious journeys follow the one-way road into Islam and never back. To some Muslims living in the Islamic world, however, this one-way traffic appeared to have led into a blind alley. These Muslims attempted to retrace their fathers or their own steps and abandoned their religion in order to join another as a rule Christianity. Here you see a map of the distribution of the various Christianities in the Middle East in the first few centuries of the Islamic rule, the period that I'm concerned with. Some of these conversions to Christianity have been researched. Every medievalist should be aware of the voluntary martyrdom movement in 9th century Cordoba, just as every Mamluk historian should be familiar with a similar movement in 14th century Egypt. Muslim conversions to Greek Orthodoxy in the Ottoman Empire have also received some attention from scholars. In each case, most of those executed were recanting Christian apostates, but a few were Muslims born into Muslim families. In this paper, I offer an initial assessment of the evidence for a full set of conversions from Islam to Christianity, one which took place in the Muslim-ruled lands of the Middle East from the 8th to the 10th century, and in which at least as many Muslim-born Muslims were involved as Christian apostates. These conversions, like the conversions to Greek Orthodoxy in the Ottoman Empire, did not constitute a movement. Most were decisions reached by individuals separated from each other by land, time, and theology. What unites them is that they all took place in the Middle East under Islamic rule before Muslims became the demographic majority there, yet after the initial upheaval of the conquest and after Islam had started taking on its classical shape. My main aim in this paper is to show that, despite the loss of social status and the danger for life defection from Islam entailed, such conversions were numerous enough to leave their stamp on medieval Christian culture, specifically on medieval Christian responses to Islam. The conversion narratives that I have collected, I'm going to give a few examples, but of course I'm not going to recount all of them, cover most of this area from Egypt, so Palestine and Syria, and up to the Caucasus in Armenia and Georgia. The two major groups of sources that attest to Muslim conversions to Christianity are Christian hagiographies and Christian rituals of abjurations of Islam. Chronicles written by Christians also make occasional references. Muslim texts are in general silent about specific cases of apostasy from Islam for the period after the 7th century, but the extensive discussions of the fate of apostates indicate that Muslim religious scholars were well aware of them. The first group of sources, Christian hagiography, preserves dozens of individual narratives of Muslim conversions from the 8th to the 10th century, some condensed into a few lines, others developed in great detail. Several of them feature Christian converts to Islam who had regretted their apostasy and returned to their former religion. Most repentant Christian apostates were Melkites. Melkites in the medieval Islamic world were Chalcedonian Christians who followed the same creed as Western Christians at the time and of course, Byzantine Christians. Today, Melkite is used for a different, for Eastern Catholic community in the Middle East. So one of these converts, called Qais ibn Rabi ibn Yazid al-Ghassani, was an Arab Christian from Najran. Najran is in northern Yemen. And this is the first page of the earliest manuscript of his life. He traveled to Jerusalem for pilgrimage at 20 years of age, but ended up converting to Islam and participating in raids against Byzantium for 13 years. Afterward, when passing through Baalbek in today's Lebanon, Qais asked the priest to translate for him from the Gospel. The translated passage made Qais regret his apostasy. Following his recantation, he lived as the monk Abdel Masih for about 20 years. After becoming superior of the monastery of St. Catherine on Mount Sinai, one day he traveled to Ramla, the seat of the governor of Palestine, to resolve some taxation problems of the monastery with the Muslim authorities. During the journey, he was recognized by a former Muslim comrade arrested and finally beheaded for apostasy in the 1730s or 1740s. Another narrative about the recantation of a Melkite apostate is that of Dahak, or as he is called in the Greek manuscript that preserves his life, Gelasius, and his brothers from Mayumas near Gaza. Their father converted to Islam when they were small children. After the father died, Dahak left for Jerusalem, received baptism, and with the name Bacchus in the monastery of Marsabas in the Judean desert. After he met his mother, who had remained Christian, in the Church of the Resurrection in Jerusalem, she told about his conversion to his brothers, who converted too and fled abroad. One of them, however, rejected to do so, and the family of his Muslim wife denounced Bacchus to the authorities. He was beheaded at some point during the last two decades of the 8th century. Other conversion narratives concern Muslims born to Muslim parents. One of them, perhaps the most popular one among Christians in the medieval Islamic world, retold for centuries in Arabic and Greek and Syriac, was that of Rauf al-Qurashi. Rauf was a high-ranking Arab who converted to Melkite Christianity as a result of miracles and visions he experienced in the Church of St. Theodore in Damascus. He visited Jerusalem, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, was baptized in the River Jordan, and renamed Anthony. Then he donned the habit and returned to Damascus, publicly proclaiming his conversion to Christianity. He was eventually executed for apostasy on the orders of the Caliph Harun al-Rashid in Raqqa in northern Syria in 799. A third story is set in 10th century Egypt and features a Muslim who went on to become a Coptic saint. It's the martyrdom of Muzahim, born to a Muslim father and a Coptic mother in Damira near Damietta in the Nile Delta. Ever since his childhood, he had wanted to join his mother's religion, and when he grew up, he did so. He married a pious Christian girl and received baptism in Damietta. The couple had to hide from the Muslim authorities and flee from town to town in order to avoid discovery. They were eventually seized, and Gyrgis, as Muzahim was called after his baptism, was beheaded in 978. This is a modern Coptic monastery in the same area, built on the site of an old one. Most stories of Muslim converts to Christianity end in the convert's execution, but not all do so. Some narratives illustrate that it was sometimes possible to leave Islam and live. One of them is the life of Ibn Rajab, a Cairene convert to Coptic Christianity from a well-to-do Muslim family. While wandering about in Cairo in the early 970s, he came across the preparations to execute a Muslim convert. The Muslim convert to Christianity, of course. The convert accosted Ibn Rajah that one day he would similarly forsake Islam to Christianity. Although incredulous at the time, he indeed did so on his way back from pilgrimage to Mecca. When his family learned about his conversion, they went to the extremes to convince him to recant, to no avail. His father finally, in the reign of Al-Hakim, in the late 10th, early 11th century, informed the Fatimid authorities of his apostasy, but the judge released him. He spent some time in Wadi Natrun, the ancient Skitis, and later became a priest in an upper Egyptian village. Even the residents of that village knew that he was a former Muslim. Yet instead of returning to Islam, he penned polemical treatises against it, and instead of being executed, he died of old age as a Christian. There are, of course, many more examples. These narratives are merely the most detailed ones I encountered. Some of the most detailed ones I encountered. Brief references to anonymous Muslim converts, individuals or groups, crop up time and again in chronicles or hagiographies. The lives of only those converts are known in any detail that were venerated by their communities as saints or otherwise gained fame. The rest remain nameless and featureless. I will not go into detail about the historicity of the narratives. Obviously, one encounters many that are clearly ahistorical. The ones I mentioned earlier and some others, however, abound in identifiable biographical, geographical, onomastic, and chronological details. And this should inspire sufficient trust, at least in the basics of their stories and for the purpose of my preliminary survey. You know. Does this collection of conversion narratives together constitute a historically representative sample of Muslim conversions to Christianity in this period? To some extent, I think. For example, it's very much possible that most converts were men. I have yet to come across the narrative of conversion from this period that features a woman. For women in the medieval Middle East, it must have been much more difficult to break social bonds, even for the time needed to join another community, than it was for men. It is also plausible that the converts who turned monks outnumbered those who did not. Monks not only embodied ideal Christian life for medieval Christians, but their life in the desert or behind the walls of the monastery provided a relatively safe cover from meeting former Muslim acquaintances, and thus might have been a natural choice for any convert. I'm more skeptical about the proportion of the executed converts. Most stories end in the executions of the converts. Although Muslim law unequivocally prescribes death as punishment for apostasy, to have him executed, the authorities first had to find a convert who could have taken refuge in any monastery or moved to a different region. In a pre-modern society, possessing scarce resources to effectively police its population, this was surely often an elusive goal. The most likely explanation for the preponderance of martyrs in the narratives is, of course, that the authors considered the converts' readiness to sacrifice their lives to represent, even more than simple monks, asceticism, the highest ideal of Christian life. Hagiographies do not preserve all cases of conversion from Islam to Christianity. They are the tip of the iceberg. They are cases of exemplary conduct enshrined in sacred literature for the edification of future generations. The second group of sources, Christian rituals for the abjuration of Islam, suggests that conversions to Christianity were not limited to a few nonconformists, as it might otherwise seem from the small number of extant narratives, but that they occurred regularly enough to warrant the development of a ceremony tailored to them. Rituals for the abjuration of Islam are documented only in the Melkite and the Coptic communities and are preserved in Greek, Syriac, Coptic, and Arabic manuscripts. This is beginning of a Melkite ritual. It's a manuscript in Oxford in the Bodleian Library. And this one is also in the Bodleian Library. This is a Coptic ritual on the left side of the page. You see the Coptic text, and then in the right column, the Arabic translation. Some of these rites contain clauses for the denial of specific Muslim doctrines. Others only carry headings that refer to Muslims or apostate Christians among those who should perform the ritual when converting to Christianity or recanting its abandonment. These rites are not well known to scholars. Many have not been edited at all, studied, or even noted anywhere but in manuscript catalogues. For example, a Coptic ritual called the Rite of the Jar, written in parallel columns in Coptic and in Arabic as this one, in all extant copies, survives in several manuscripts. The text of the rite explicitly states that it was designed for Christian converts to Islam who wish to return to the Coptic community. A part of it reads, "He, the apostate, has run to you, God, from the bonds of the devil and every evil belief of the Hagarines, all of which he rejects before you. Do not in any way cut him off from the original baptism that he first received." I won't go into more detail about the rites. They haven't been studied much. One point I would like to make, however, is that it probably didn't take long for any of the Christian communities to develop rites for the abjuration of Islam. The earliest Greek rites that we have is usually assumed to have been developed in the late 9th century. That's far too late, and there's literary reference to the existence of similar rituals from the middle of the 8th century, although we don't have any text, but probably it didn't take even until the middle of the 8th century to develop such rites. At the time of the Arab conquest, all Christian communities had rituals in place for those leaving Judaism, Manichaeism, and unorthodox Christian communities for the sake of Orthodox Christianity, whatever unorthodox and Orthodox meant in each case. And it stands to reason that there were sporadic incidents of recantations of Christian apostates to Islam and of conversions of Muslims to Christianity as soon as Islam was added to the religious palette of the Middle East. And this required the development of the rites for their use. One might assume that the Christians were overjoyed when Muslims wished to join their communities. This wasn't quite the case. Reading the narratives, two fault lines appear to have existed among the Christians in this regard. The first one, already referred to above, was between the clergy. No, I don't think I have referred to it. Between the clergy and the monastics. The clergy was generally reluctant to actively participate in the conversion. As a rule, the would-be converts approached the priest first, following the miracle that convinced him to join Christianity, but the priest refused to baptize him and directed him to monks. The monks, unlike the priest, were eager to administer the baptism and even to accept the convert to their monastery. On consideration, this makes perfect sense. In the Islamic world, the clergy were official representatives of their communities before the Muslim authorities, and their failure to keep the law, in this instance, to adhere to the ban on converting Muslims to another religion, would have drawn troubles not only on their own head, but also for their communities. Monks didn't have this role, and as an added benefit, they lived in relative seclusion, much of their lives hidden from Muslims and Muslim authorities. They were the ideal candidates to baptize the converts behind the walls of a monastery or in a deserted spot on the bank of a river. The second fault line was between hawkish monks and dovish monks. The narratives occasionally report opinions that the conversion can be accepted as full only if the convert professes his new religion before his erstwhile co-religionists, whatever the price. This attitude, rejected as ignorant by a Coptic order, as well as explicitly or implicitly by several other hagiographers, resembles the attitude that drove some Christians to voluntary martyrdom in 9th century Cordoba. Muslim attitudes towards the converts were also varied. While according to the narratives, many converts were beheaded, several were not executed as matter-of-factly as the laws of apostasy require, and two died of old age, despite attempts of Muslim family members and mobs to have them killed. Unfortunately, the descriptions of juridical proceedings are never quite detailed in the text, yet these instances provide some insight into how a theoretically uncompromising law was not always followed in practice. What attracted these Muslims to Christianity? People, of course, do not always act out of material concerns, and many of these converts must have been attracted to Christianity for reasons we cannot hope to account for today. In the narratives, the Christian apostates who had converted to Islam in their childhood or youth simply abandoned it as soon as the opportunity arose, without the hagiographers offering much in the way of explanation. Abd al-Masih, who had left Christianity in his youth, returned to it as a result of a chance encounter, an encounter that reminded him of his old life. Muslim-born Muslims, however, converted after having witnessed miracles, seen visions, and experienced visitations from saints. It appears as if the hagiographers conveyed their bewilderment through the way they chose to narrate the conversions. They appear to have understood, although never explicitly addressed, the nostalgia Christians apostate experienced when they came into contact with their old world. The hagiographers could sense why the apostates might have wanted to retrace their steps. But Muslim-born Muslims' conversion was for them too, it seems, beyond human understanding. Only miracles could account for it. I have three tentative suggestions for what might have eased the way of some Muslim-born Muslims to Christianity. First and foremost of them is the vitality and prestige that Christian culture retained for centuries after the Arab conquests. Writing in the 9th century, the Muslim al-Jahiz fumes in his refutation of the Christians that the average Muslim holds Christians in too high regard because of their sophisticated culture and scientific knowledge. The early Abbasid period is remembered as the peak of Muslim cultural achievement, in great part because of the Greco-Arabic translation movement. The Christians of the Islamic world played a crucial role in the translation movement. It wouldn't have happened without the Greek and Syriac philosophical and scientific manuscripts in the possession of Christian communities and without the linguistic skills of the Christian translators. The achievement was as much Christian as Muslim. The 9th century Jewish philosopher Daud ibn Marwan al-Muqammas al-Rakki converted to Christianity in order to study with the Christian scholars of his day. Some Muslims, too, might have been drawn to Christianity by this scholarly reputation of its adherents. In addition, the converts, of course, couldn't look back on the history of the Middle East as we do and see that the religion they chose has been contracting ever since. Among the military ups and downs of the Umayyad, the Abbasid, and the Fatimid Caliphate, it may not have been quite clear that Muslim rule will suffer few interruptions in the millennium to come. To strengthen Christian, in particular Malkite, hopes for the future, just as the Christian demographic majority started to give way to an increasing pace of conversions to Islam, the Byzantine military scored significant blows against the Arabs and gained back large territories just in this period. Nothing suggested that their series of successes would cease. On the practical side, it may still have been feasible for the converts to disappear among the Christian population of the Middle East if they chose to do so. if the estimate that the Muslim numerical minority turned into majority in the Middle East around 1000 is correct, converts to Christianity in the first 3.5 centuries of Muslim rule could still start a new life away from their homes, untraceably to Muslim acquaintances and authorities alike. There were no doubt many Christian villages suitable for such purposes, and of course anyone within the walls of monasteries could feel relatively safe. But none of these three aspects of the historical context serve to explain the conversions in a satisfactory manner. They are barely more satisfactory than the miracles and the visions of the hagiographies. These factors might have eased the converts' way to Christianity, but it's unlikely that, save for exceptional cases, they caused it. Is a series of conversions to Christianity merely a footnote to history? Did the converts leave an enduring mark? They may well have done so. Christian polemical writing against Islam in the Muslim world flourished in the 9th century. Several treatises with outspoken critique of Muslim doctrines and rituals were penned at the time, all of them anonymously or under a pseudonym. Christian authors were also busy writing apologetical treatises that aimed to defend Christian doctrines and practices but didn't attack Islam. After the 9th century, polemical writing, although didn't entirely cease, dwindled fast, but apologetical writing continued to thrive for centuries more. The period when converts to Christianity in the Islamic world included quite a few Muslims raised in Muslim families coincides with this heyday of polemical literary activity. Not only was there a lot of polemical writing in the 9th century, it was also remarkably well informed on all matters Islamic. For example, the disputation of the monk Abraham of Tiberias, an anonymous Melkite treatise from the early 9th century, is remarkably familiar with the Quran, Quran exegesis, hadith, Muslim sectarian disputes, Muslim rituals, advice literature, popular epic, and more. He cites passages verbatim as they occur in Muslim writings. When his protagonist, the monk Abraham, addresses Muslims in the text or the Muslim characters speak in it, the author employs Muslim phraseology, and when the context requires it, he shifts to Christian idioms. It's unlikely that a Christian without close contact with Islam could write with such a nuanced understanding of the correct Muslim idiom. The anonymous author of the disputation could well have been a Muslim convert to Christianity. Several other polemical treatises also give impressions of depth and breadth of knowledge of Muslim literature and saturation with Muslim religious terminology. They too seem to speak the language of insider to Islam. They reveal a familiarity with Islam and Muslim culture that could hardly have been picked up from books or conversations with Muslims, and that seems to point to direct participation in rituals and to a certain level of Muslim education. Only meticulous further research about each treatise could substantiate these impressions. In the following, instead of looking for more internal clues for possible authorship of Christian polemical texts by former Muslims, I will focus on the few that are known to have been written by Muslims. I'm aware of only 4 Christian polemical treatises against Islam that claim to have originated with former Muslims by 2 authors. 2 of the treatises are extant in part. One of them is known as the Kashun document. Its author states that he received his rich information about the rise of Islam and Muslim rituals from a Muslim who converted to Christianity and fled to Crete. As this text is extant only in Armenian translation, first attested in the early 13th century, the original text was probably written in Syriac or Arabic no later than the early 9th century in Iraq. But as it's extant only in Armenian, its phraseology cannot be examined. The other one, the phraseology of the other extant treatise, can be examined. However, this is the Kitab al-Wadih written by Ibn Rajah, the 10th century Qaidin convert to whose life I refer to above. Ibn Rajah wrote 2 more critiques of Islam. They are entitled The Choice Passages of the Exegetes and the Corruption of the Opponents, and The Book of Clarification Concerning the Contradiction of the Hadith. The first of these 2 is clearly a polemical treatise based on Quran exegesis, and the second is polemic based on Hadith, sayings and narratives ascribed to Muhammad and early Muslims. Unfortunately, these 2 are lost. Only this one survives in part, just about 20 pages of it survive in this manuscript. Were its preface more indebted to Muslim diction, it would be a Muslim religious text. In the following excerpt, I signaled characteristic Quranic and other Muslim religious phrases and vocabulary that I could identify with yellow in the Arabic and in the English, and you see how saturated it is with Muslim expressions, which you don't find in texts that were written by orders who have known to have been Christian all their lives. In addition to the indebtedness of its language to the Quran and Muslim literature, the text also reveals deep familiarity with the Muslim tradition, in particular with Hadith and Muslim law. On the following pages, Ibn Rajah cites three sayings ascribed to Muhammad with full transmission chain before turning to refute them. Then the fragment of the treatise is unfortunately cut short. I think this example demonstrates that when a known former Muslim produced critics of Islam, the characteristics of their writings were similar to those of anonymous and pseudonymous Christian polemical texts against Islam. There are many cases in history similar to these possible ex-Muslim Christian polemicists. Neophytes are always choice polemicists. They are closely familiar with their old and new religion and often introduce new material into the debate. Jewish converts to Christianity in medieval Europe introduced the Talmud into Christian anti-Jewish polemic. Jewish converts to Islam, the 12th century Samuel al-Maghribi and the 14th century Abd al-Haqq al-Islami, can boast similar achievements in Muslim anti-Jewish polemic. Among Christian converts to Islam, the 9th century Ali ibn Rabban al-Tabari injected new material into Muslim anti-Christian polemic. If my hypothesis about the direct Muslim influence on the 9th century Christian critic of Islam is correct, the Muslim converts to Christianity left an influential legacy. The polemical treatises they helped to create were read widely among Christians in the Islamic world, according to the manuscript evidence. The apologetical treatises from the same period, which concentrate on defending Christian doctrines, often survive in unique manuscripts. The polemical treatises, by contrast, are extant in dozens of copies. Muslim conversions to Christianity from the 8th to the 10th century may not have led to demographic changes, but they leave substantial literary traces.